I'm Shannon Sakosha, Chief Investment Officer here at Boston Private. Thank you for joining us today as we look ahead to the third quarter of 2019. I'm joined today by my colleague, Ryan McQuilkin, Head of Fixed Income. As we look back on the first quarter and the second quarter of 2019, we saw a clear continuation of the trend that began at the end of December. We had the pivot by the Fed, which allowed us to gain confidence that the Fed was going to continue their path of accommodation rather than monetary tightening. And that allowed a resurgence in risk assets over the first two quarters. We did see uncertainty around the use of tariffs crop up in May as terminology such as economic weapon was bandied about. However, even with the declines that we experienced in May, we had positive returns in the equity market. Bonds, for their part, continue to hang in there, as it appears now that rates will at least be on hold, if not potentially cut, which Ryan will talk about later in our podcast. We turn to the review of our economic and market indicators, which are the basis for our recommendations as it relates to asset allocation. One of the most important ones we look at is leading economic indicators, as they tend to be forecasting for the next 12 to 18 months the strength of the economy. They include a number of underlying variables that look at everything from manufacturing to the consumer, inflation, jobs. And so they really do provide a nice blueprint for us to get a sense of how the economy will grow over the next couple of years. While these leading economic indicators are still trending positively, the strength of the underlying data did soften a bit during the quarter. Sentiment surveys, which we call sort of soft data, such as consumer confidence and manufacturing indices, they bumped around a little bit based on some of the things that were happening with tariffs, based on some of the things that we were seeing in the economy. And the jobs number, which was released on Friday, provided some evidence that some of this bumping around could be transitory and that the weakness that we're seeing might not persist over the course of the summer and through the back half of the year. But without a move higher in prices in the form of inflation and an improvement in the outlook for the economy overseas, we remain cautious. One of the things that you may have heard is that the U.S. economy tends to lead the global economy into recession, and so that's why certain economists are discounting the potential effect of slowdown in China, a slowdown in Europe, a potential concern around the impact of Brexit. However, what we found is that in this increasingly integrated global economy, this persistent weakness outside of the United States can certainly impact CEO confidence here in the United States, and we've seen some evidence of that in the lack of meaningful capital expenditure over the last couple of years, despite the very stimulative tax cut. When we think about this recent deceleration in leading economic indicators, we look back at two periods that have occurred since the financial crisis for some similarities. One occurred in 2012. This was, if you look back, things like Obamacare, a recovery from the European debt crisis, the potential fiscal cliff, and an upcoming election all weighed on market sentiment. In 2016, we saw GDP rise only 1.6% during that year. We really were looking for an escape velocity, which would bring the economy to a potential accelerating point. However, we saw weak investment in both residential and business, the energy market essentially collapsed, and we had a strong dollar that weighed on earnings here for multinational companies. With that, we fast forward to where we are today. We have many similar headwinds as it relates to another upcoming election, potential policy changes in Washington, the lack of inflation that I talked about previously. But we sense that the underlying economy perhaps is not as strong as it was during those previous two periods, and that's why we're a bit more concerned about the deceleration in those leading economic indicators that we're seeing today. When we look at the stock market compared to leading economic indicators, the stock market more recently has been probably what we would say more resilient than what we're seeing in the economy. Factors that we point to as it relates to this resiliency are the abundance of buybacks that we've seen in the market. Those have certainly helped to move asset prices higher over the last couple of years. Continuing accommodative policy worldwide, especially now after the pivot, and a very clear lack of alternatives, which Ryan will talk about as we discuss the fixed income markets. The last thing that we're looking for before I turn it over to Ryan is essentially an uptick in earnings. So one of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the year, if some of you read our pieces, was this upcoming earnings recession that we were anticipating. We haven't seen the earnings recession as of yet. However, we are very concerned about Q2 earnings coming out, which are going to be released over the next few weeks, that could indicate a slowing in earnings, which would be concerning for the market given the valuations of the S&P 500. So in our view, that leads us to more of a balanced view for the back half of the year. We've moved to a position of underweight slightly in equities, a neutral weight in fixed income. We've added some differentiated exposure, which Ryan and I will talk about later in the podcast. But from our perspective, while we feel the economy is still somewhat supportive of potential equity gains in the back half of the year, we are less constructive on the equity market than we were at the beginning of this year, and thus have decided to reallocate some of the capital that we have for our client portfolios against that backdrop. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Ryan, who's going to talk a little bit about the Fed, the yield curve, and our view on the bond markets.
Thanks, Jen. So on the fixed income side, not unlike the equity markets, a significant driver of market sentiment has been the Fed. And it really, they really have taken quite the path to get where they are at the moment. If you go back to the middle of 2018, last year, you know, the market was forecasting 2 to 3 rate hikes for this coming year. You know, fast forward to the fourth quarter of last year, characterized by some pretty dramatic weakness. Housing definitely falling by the wayside a little bit. Some weakness in another interest rate sensitive sector, which is autos. You know, a lot of these things came together and started to give the Fed the idea that policy was possibly too tight. If you look at one of their main indicators, core PCE, which is their main inflation indicator, we started this year at 2%. We're down to 1.6%. So, you know, all these things are sort of coming together and giving the Fed the idea that maybe their policy is slightly too tight. We've said before, this Fed funds rate is a very imprecise tool. A lot of the lag time, a lot of the effects aren't seen until several months after the fact, until businesses make decisions and they see how the flow of capital, goes. So then you look at where we are today, and the Fed seems very poised to deliver a rate cut at the end of this month. You know, it's at the point now where actually the market will probably be disappointed if they don't get that rate cut. And if there was ever any doubt in terms of what they were thinking, Chairman Powell pretty much solidified their intentions before Congress the other day. He cited a lack of business investment that is slowing, trade and tariff concerns, some uncertainties globally in terms of where growth is headed. So they certainly seem poised to cut as an insurance to where the overall economy is going.
Ryan, you mentioned how the equity market would be disappointed if we didn't see that Fed rate cut at the end of this month. Can you talk about how the bond market has been positioned for that rate cut and what we're looking at as far as corporate bond spreads and how we incorporate our views into the implementation of our portfolio construction?
Right. So overall, you've seen basically as the sentiment towards rate cuts have gone through the system, you've seen basically a parallel shift downward in the yield curve. And one of the major things we're looking at are corporate bond spreads, both on the investment grade and the high yield side. Very tight levels, not showing much any signs of stress, so we're pretty optimistic there.
One of the things we've heard a lot about is this upcoming wall of potential refinancing and the expansion of that BBB part of the credit market. With the Fed essentially having a ceiling on rates, is that less of a concern, do you think, for investors over the next 12 months or so?
I think so. There has been some increase in the amount of BBB issuance out there. It's certainly become a larger pool of the market. There have been some concerns about whether these companies are over-levered. Overall, we like to remind people that at that part of the market, these are multi-billion dollar companies, strong cash flows, strong balance sheets, as mostly about a willingness to pay as opposed to the ability to pay. We're not as concerned there. These companies are doing very well.
We talk a lot about in our commentary about the yield curve, treasuries, corporate bonds. However, with our clients. Many of them are invested in the municipal bond market. With the Tax Act of 2017, we were faced with an environment where there was some uncertainty about the demand for municipal bonds. How have we seen that play out, and what changes have you experienced as an investor in these markets?
Sure. So the municipal bond market is an area that we follow very closely. A lot of our clients are buying bonds in that space. And it is historically rich at the moment, but there are some good reasons behind that. You've had some very, very strong flows into muni bonds to the tune of about $50 billion year-to-date in ETFs and mutual funds. You mentioned the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. Not only did that pull supply forward back into 2017, but it also pulled about 30% of the new issuance out of the market in the form of pre-refunded bonds. Think of that like a homeowner that can refinance their house at lower rates. Municipalities also have the ability to do this. That Tax Act eliminated that ability, pulling out about 30% of the market in new issue supply.
Well, we talked earlier about some changes that we made in our overall portfolio construction, and one of the things that we did was we took traditional equity exposure down, but we did add some positioning in preferred stocks. You want to talk a little bit about the dynamics of preferred stocks that we find to be particularly attractive right now?
Sure. So once the committee made the overall call to reduce equity exposure, the question was sort of where do you put those funds? High yield and leveraged loans, are an attractive yield component. They do have some sort of event risk component to them, though, as well. Certainly some headline risk there that's been well documented. So we decided that preferreds could be a good option, adding income to clients. In the preferred space, they're mostly composed of financials, which have very strong balance sheets. Since 2008, the recession, these companies have actually been overregulated to the point where we feel very comfortable with them in a stress scenario. The main risk to preferreds is rates increasing, and we sort of think that's off the table, with the Fed sort of positioning how they are.
Great. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for listening in. We hope you found this perspective helpful.
And of course, you can call your wealth advisor to discuss any portfolio planning need.
Ryan, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time today. And we welcome any questions or thoughts that you may have. You can find me on Twitter at Shannon Sakosha. And that's it for our Q3 Outlook. We look forward to seeing you in October as we look forward to Q4.